Legends and Light Cycles, Zebras and Robots, you are now tuned in to the Disneyholic Show.
Hello and welcome to the Disneyholic Show. That's Mike TV.
And that's Jen Diz.
Today we remember Disney legend Rolly Crump. Then we take a trip to the grid, check out the innovations at South by Southwest, and gossip about last weekend's Oscars. All right, we have a lot of really fun stuff to talk about today, but there is one somber note, so I'm going to start off there, as sad as that is. But we wanted to take a moment to just remember the life of Disney legend Rolly Crump. Unfortunately, we lost him this last weekend. He was 93 years old, though, so he lived a fascinating life, right? So. And just a little bit about Rolly, in case you are not familiar with him. He is not only a Disney legend, he was a Disney Imagineer and a Disney artist for a long time. His full name is Roland, and I found this out by doing some research on him recently to make sure I have my facts straight. And turns out the name that he goes by all these years, Rolly, how I've known him and everybody refers to him, was actually a nickname given to him directly from Walt Disney, because Walt Disney could not remember his name. Like, Roland just wouldn't stick for some reason, and he was naming him, like, he was, like, making up names all the time because he couldn't remember his name, and then out of nowhere, he just decided Rolly was a good name to stick.
I guess
stick,
he looked like a Rolly to Walt. You know what's funny? I have an uncle on my mom's side named Uncle Rolly, and his full name is Rolando. So it's just the Filipino-Spanish version. Yeah, that's interesting.
How funny.
And we always, as kids, the cousins, nieces, and we always made fun of the name, but we didn't know where it came from until we got older. We're like, oh, it's short for something. We just thought he was Uncle Rolly Polly.
Yeah, Rolly Polly.
And he has
sure.
a big, we love him. He has a big mole on his face. So he was just the butt of all the jokes with his name and all that.
Oh,
Rolly, Molly, Rolly Polly.
Oh, geez. So anyways, Rolly joined the Walt Disney Studios in 1952. So he's pretty old school, but he was a, he kind of came in after that initial, like, nine old men generation, right? So he was, like, kind of the new young guy on campus. And he worked as an animator on movies like Peter Pan, Lady and the Tramp, Sleeping Beauty, amongst
classics.
Plenty of others. Yep. And then in 1959, he made his move over into WED Enterprises, which now we know is WDI, which is Imagineering, right? Walt Disney Imagineering. And he worked on some, like, a ton of things, but some of the most popular ones were the 1964 World's Fair, It's a Small World, Walt Disney's Enchanted Tiki Room, The Haunted Mansion, and then my personal favorite, Museum of the Weird.
Wow, those are all classics too. These are hits.
Yeah, right. Yeah. He's got his hands in everything for sure. He ended up retiring from the Walt Disney Company in 1996. Isn't that insane? So he worked there for like 44 years.
Wow. And even now that seems long ago, which is weird.
Yeah, right. And then Rolly was quite popular for a lot of things. First of all, like I had mentioned earlier, he was like the young guy on campus to a lot of the original Imagineers and original animators and artists at the Disney Company. And he was kind of like hippy dippy, right? So like he came in with this like cool guy way of living, and he was outspoken. I heard a story about how he had like a teepee in a room once that he would like sit in. It's like his little creative, like a little space or whatever. So he was definitely like his own whole thing going on. And some of them hated it. Some of them loved him for it. And then, you know, later on, they ended up all loving him for it. They just had to really get to know him.
That's kind of cool. I mean, it checks out. If he moved to Imagineering in 1959, was designing World's Fair in the 64. I mean, it was the 60s. How fun would it be to be on that team with the cool people?
Right. Oh, my gosh. So yeah, it was very big, long career. And then a couple things I just wanted to mention that are my personal favorite things about him besides Museum of the Weird is there's a story about him in the Walt Disney Enchanted Tiki Room in the creation of it that just stuck with me. And I think about it all the time because I see it all the time. There was a story about how he created a faux wood piece. So like a lot of the Tiki Room looks like wood, but it's not actually real wood or like the Tiki Gods or whatever it is that looks like wood, but you might touch and you could tell it's not actually wood. What he does to give it that wood look is he just took a plastic fork and dragged it down whatever the product is, what's the word I'm looking for? The medium.
Medium.
I think it's called, right? He would like drag a fork through it and it would give it the lines of like a natural looking like piece of bark or tree.
Wow.
So super interesting. And I see that effect used everywhere now. And I remember even, it might have been with you when we did an escape room in Anaheim called the Magic Cottage.
Yep.
And do you remember me asking about that? Because the walls were like that. And I was like, did you guys use a fork? And they're like, how'd you know? And I'm like, oh my God, Rolly Crumb.
So, it seems like definitely something I would imagine in escape room because you need that texture a lot.
Right.
For the story or for the place. And I love that it's such a simple thing that you might... Nowadays, I guess, Rolly might have been doing it on TikTok and someone would have been going, oh, that's a way to do
it? That's cool. That's amazing. I would have never thought of that myself. So just really fun stuff. And I did have an opportunity a couple times to meet him and chat with him. So just the sweetest man. I got to see him at his auction where he auctioned off a lot of his personal art pieces, which is a big deal. He also was an artist on his own time. He did a lot of really fun, definitely not like family friendly or Disney related artwork. So like just kind of seeing someone branch out and being their own person at the same time was cool to see. And another time I met him was really cool, actually. Somebody had created a tribute to Museum of the Weird. And what they did was they had a comic book shop in Hollywood, I believe, or Los Angeles somewhere, called Creature Features.
Oh.
And they opened it up as a gallery, and they let a bunch of people submit fan art of the Museum of the Weird. So, like, these were other fans creating art around Rolly Crump's Museum of the Weird, right? And so you got to go through this gallery of all this new artwork that was created based off the originals. And Rolly Crump was there to enjoy it as well. And he was doing autographs. And another item that you are very familiar with and everyone should be very familiar with that's a Disney-holic that Rolly created is the Demon Eye or Creepy Eye wallpaper, as people call it.
Oh my gosh.
The Corridor of Doors.
That's beyond classic. That's iconic.
Iconic, right? Exactly. So that's in the Corridor Doors in the Haunted Mansion. And yeah, he created that. That was part of the Museum of the Weird that actually made it into the Haunted Mansion.
That's cool.
And I had bought a swatch of the wallpaper off of like this website. I think it's called Spoonflowers, so long ago. I bought a swatch of it just to see what it looked like. It was fabric. And then I took it with me and I had him sign it. So I have on my wall the framed autograph sign of Rolly Crump on the wallpaper. So pretty cool. Just like one of those things that are extra special now to have. But we will miss him. But 93 years of amazingness is pretty cool to say.
It's hard these days, like when you're like a big fan of somebody. I mean, you have literally his autograph hanging somewhere. And then you find out what I guess through like Instagram these days when a celebrity passes. You're like scrolling and
Oh my gosh.
What's this?
It's like, oh my God. Yeah, it just stops your whole day. That's how yesterday or 2 days ago when I found out it was yesterday. And I hadn't been on social media like all day long because I was just very busy at work. And then all of a sudden I looked and I saw a bunch of people posting about it. And my heart was like, not Rolly. But, you know, he lived a long life. Now, our friend of the show, Jess Quo, brought up, she goes, I think the only person left that was in Imagineering with Walt Disney directly is Bob Gurr that's left around now. And I was like, yeah, you might
and
be
he's
right.
Living
like,
his best life, right? He's like always doing an event, signing parties.
He's like, I think 91 now, which also we'll talk about later, but John Williams also 91, looking amazing. Like these guys are like,
oh, I didn't know he was
90s,
that old.
Just living their best life. Like what? So I can only dream to live up to that age and have accomplished all the things that Rolly Crump did. But anyways, rest in peace, Rolly Crump.
Rest
all right.
In peace.
On to happier things. Mike, you recently got to go on another trip to Walt Disney World. I was very, like, had the biggest FOMO this time around.
Yeah.
But you got to do a few new things, so I'm excited. You got to tell me a little bit about it while you're on the trip, but I want to hear more. So let me know all about your trip, and I think you're going to start over at your hotel you stayed at.
Yeah, so this was definitely an unplanned trip, meaning I didn't plan it until I got a reservation for the Tron Light Cycle DVC preview at Magic Kingdom. Oh, that was a mouthful. And so I was like, okay, I got it. Now I got to book everything. And really, there wasn't much available. I had kept checking the DVC website because I want to use my points, my DVC points. And I also have a batch of points that expires March 30th or 31st, whatever the last day is. And so it's been weighing on me. So it all came together perfectly. I was like, okay, now I have a reason to go. I have a reservation. And then I ended up finding a pretty cool accommodation that was available on those exact days, which was over at Animal Kingdom Lodge. It was a one-bedroom savanna view, and I've never stayed at Animal Kingdom Lodge yet. This was the Kidani Village side, so that's more of the DVC side, and so I was so excited. And so I do have some tips for people who are planning on visiting Animal Kingdom Lodge, whether it's DVC or not. There's a setup that's hard to see when you're booking, but when you get there in person, it makes more sense. So imagine the buildings of the hotels with all the rooms as a necklace that goes around your neck, from like your left shoulder to your right shoulder, a long necklace. And at the bottom of that necklace where like a diamond or gem would hang, that's the lobby, the main building, the hospitality house.
Okay.
And so you could be all the way up at the end of one of those chains. And it, I want to say it feels like a mile, but I was looking on the Diz boards and stuff, and people were saying it's a mile. And it's long.
Oh, shoot.
It's so long. Do you remember when we were at MGM one time, and it just feels like the corridors just keep going, and you're just like, what?
Yes. I felt that at a lot of hotels.
Right? Yeah. Especially when you're holding
like,
food,
up,
and you're trying to get back, and you're like, how long is this?
Or your heavy-ass suitcase. Yeah. Like,
on the carpet that doesn't roll well.
Oh, my God. So worse.
Yep. So there was a lot of that. Now, I didn't mind it because I was by myself, so I was like whatever. And then at the same time, I knew I was going to be in the room most of the time working except for Sunday night, and so I was okay with it until I saw the savanna view. And this was not a savanna, and I showed you pictures of it. They basically have a savanna view category that is with the regular savanna view categories, but you're actually only seeing like the back area of the hotel where they decided to throw some animals in there. And they have a list of animals, and there's none of the cool ones that you're sold when you're booking this hotel. So there's no giraffe, there's no zebra. It's just like cattle and stuff. So I'm not doing any of that, especially because I was going to be in the room most of the time. So went to the front desk. Well, I did some research first online, and I was like, okay, I'm not crazy. All these people are saying, whatever you do, here's the tip. Ask for an even number room. So the even number rooms are going to be, they're still going to be anywhere on that necklace chain. So it could be far from the lobby, but even number guarantees you to face what's called the Sunset Savannah. That's the main savanna when you think of, okay, or when you go visit the lodge, you see that big place where you can see all the animals. Feels like you're in Animal Kingdom Safari, Jeep ride. So that's the view that you want. That's the one that you see when you're looking at the ads. So you have to ask for an even number. But yeah, it's the same category, same price as that one that they tried to stick me with. And I was really willing to be flexible. You know, kind of when you're on a solo trip, you're just kind of like, whatever. Whatever goes here and there. And so they didn't have anything facing the savanna view that I wanted. But the gentleman was super nice. And he was like, do you have... I forgot how we got about it. But I was like, I can downgrade to a studio. I don't mind at all. I'm just by myself. So then he ended up finding me a studio facing the right spot. And so my tips are this. Number one is our usual tip, which is just ask. And they're usually happy to help you if they can. Like, nobody was being rude about it. I wasn't being rude. He was super happy he could help out. And then the second tip is, if you're looking at Animal Kingdom Lodge to stay, and you do have Savannah View, ask for an even number. And people online were saying, don't even use the online check-in. Just bypass that. Go straight to the front desk and ask for what you want. And okay. I had done the online check-in. So that's how I ended up just like wherever at random. But then as soon as I spoke to somebody, it was great. And then this guy went above and beyond and surprised me. And he was like, you know, for the inconvenience, we put two special experiences on your Magic Band. So you can go straight to Cosmic Rewind tomorrow when you're in Epcot.
Boom.
And I was like, oh my God. I was like, you made my entire week. I was like, my plans tomorrow are now set. I'm so happy. So yeah, I love when you have a great encounter with a cast member. You tell them what's up and then they help you find something better. So
yeah. And like, honestly, in situations like that, like, how can I say this? Like, it's almost, I would think it would be almost expected that some people are not going to be happy with that room when they expected a certain thing that was sold to them a certain way. And as long as you come to them and you're just polite about it, like, they probably are so happy, because most people feel that they have to attack to get what they want,
right?
Or get what they deserve, honestly, in this kind of situation, right?
Yeah.
Like, you bought something that was sold a certain way, so you should get that. But if you come at them nicely, then they'll help you out. But then, or if they can, right? And then, but if you're rude and mean,
yeah, nobody wants
that. It's not going
to
make anybody's day.
Exactly.
And you're just going to be more stressed out on top of it. So,
yeah.
Again,
so
just ask. Ask
just
politely.
Just ask.
That should
and
be
ask
it.
A couple of people. I did ask a couple of people. I should mention, I asked somebody first, and she was also super polite, couldn't find me anything. And then that's when we're like, can we ask someone else? And then she got the supervisor, and it was totally fine. And she was like excited that he was finding some things. It was a whole thing. Love that. Okay, more things at Animal Kingdom Lodge I thought were different was that it felt as spread out. I already mentioned how long it is to walk. It felt almost as spread out as, you know, when we go to Old Key West or Saratoga versus Grand Floridian, right? Where it's kind of more together. But everything's indoors because it's Animal Kingdom and it's hot. So the nice part is it is spread out, but you're inside the entire time, air conditioned indoors. When you're walking from point A to point B. So I thought that was kind of nice. They also apparently had room service since they opened in 2000-something. But it hasn't come back since COVID. And it's one of those things, again, where I'm like, you cannot use COVID anymore. Just say you don't want to offer this.
Yeah.
Like, what?
True, though. Thank God they allow Uber Eats and stuff now. Because,
right? It's
like,
so
when you're
true.
Working, that's a thing that, like, one of the things that you have to really consider from working from home at locations like Disney World, like, I think it's totally doable, but you do have to really think about food stuff.
Yeah.
Like, you have to get delivery or food service.
And it has to be, like, planned in your day, like, order it now and then take your meeting.
Yeah,
and
you have
be
to
there.
Order at the right time, wait the hour to get it, all the stuff. Yep.
You have to, like, go down to the lobby in your flip-flops and, like, find the person. But, yeah, so I did order a lot of Uber Eats while I was there. And then I did order... They have a takeaway version of Sanaa. Have we been to Sanaa before?
No.
The Indian restaurant? Okay. It's really good. I've been there a few times. I think I took Jerry because it's one of the few places a long time ago that was guaranteed to have vegan food. But they have really good Indian food there. And they now offer a to-go version of it. So you could order on mobile dining and just go pick it up without sitting down at the restaurant, which was a nice option for one of those days where I needed lunches. So the food's definitely good there. The animal viewing is out of this world. Like, what?
Aww.
There are times where I was just like, I can't believe I'm standing on my balcony and I'm looking at a zebra over there and I'm looking at this longhorn thingamajiggy over here. And then in the middle of the night, I had sent you these photos. I was like, it's almost pitch black outside at nighttime because animals and all that. So it's, everything's dark. I didn't even know they had animals out at night. I assume they brought them to their pens. And then I kept seeing in the distance this thing, like this Loch Ness monster shape. I was like, what is that? I think is a log or what? And so then I took a picture, you know, with the newer iPhones, not even newer. I think mine's like 12. It shows, it has the thing where it can adjust the lighting and make it look like daylight. Lo and behold, right near my balcony was a giraffe just chilling, hanging out like 2 a.m.
Aw.
So cute.
He was like sitting down. It was cute.
Yeah, just sitting there. So relaxing. Yeah, I think if you want to see the animals and that's the immersion you're going for, then it's definitely the right spot. I don't think it's the right spot for someone who wants to work from a resort, because you'd probably want to be able to quickly walk to the lobby and just, you know,
right.
Browse the toiletry store or whatever, you know, just be around people for like 5 seconds or grab food. It felt more like old Key West in that sense, where I felt like there was nobody there but me. Even though it was fully booked. I would say I'm going to give it a star rating, Animal Kingdom. I would say 3 out of 5 stars. Yeah, it's great. I don't think I would put it in the deluxe category. I think quality wise it is, but it always bothered me that Animal Kingdom Lodge doesn't have any transportation that's unique. So you have to take the bus to get anywhere.
Yeah.
Including Animal Kingdom Park. For some reason, I thought there'd be like this cool Jeep that brings you, but there's nothing. It's just a bus.
That would be amazing. Like the ones that crawl up the walls and
yes.
stuff.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Imagine. I'm like, yeah, special. So yeah, there's no Skyliner. There's no monorail. There's no boats. But as it is, it's in the middle of nowhere for those animals to be safe and protected.
So those animals, they bump it up to deluxe automatically.
Right. Yeah. I guess that's what it is. I mean, you can charge, premium for that. It's just such a unique and strange thing. In a good way.
Yeah. Like, oh, I'm just got out of the shower and there's a giraffe staring at me. Like, okay.
Oh, and I have a moment now that I realize kind of connects back to Rolly Crump, where I was hanging out on the balcony and I was looking at the architecture of the buildings, and they have like these long wooden sticks with rope tied around it, like giant timber that looks like it's holding up the buildings. And every time I've been to this resort, I didn't think about it, but I assumed those were really what's holding up the building in some way. And then I had to touch it. You know, me and you, we like need to touch the texture to see what it's like.
Yeah.
So I touched it and it was definitely just all like painted on. It was not real wood and it looked so real. And I knocked on it and it was like almost hollow. So I was like, definitely this is just decoration. And they went above and beyond and put all of that across all the buildings to make it look like it's on these stilts, but it's actually not.
They dragged some forks down it and called it a day.
Right?
And it fooled you for all these years.
It totally fooled me.
Effective.
Effective. So yeah, that was AK Lodge. So that's where I was. But of course, the big event I was there for was that Sunday night that I arrived. And that was for the Tron Light Cycle Run preview night for Disney Vacation Club members. And I thought it was a pretty smooth process. Everything that they said was going to happened. You checked in at the front before you go inside. You got the cool wristband, and then you just went straight to the new Tron entrance, and there were people there just checking that you have the wristbands, and that was about it. There was really no line, and so people were encouraged to just walk around through the queue. Basically, people were telling each other, I guess because there were a lot of like content creators there. People were like, just don't go all the way in yet because then you can't come back out. But you can walk all around the outdoor queue before going into like the main entrance. And so here's my review. So first of all, you and I were at the D23 Expo in 2017 when this attraction was announced. 2017. And at the time, it sounded really cool because it was not too long after they opened the original one in Shanghai. And it was like, oh my gosh, we're getting it this fast. Cut to 2023, almost six years later. Yeah. And I think that's important context to why I'm going to review it the way I did. So first, I already had low expectations. I think I mentioned on the episode a few times. I was like, it's already old. I'm already over it. Blah, blah, blah. So I already had low expectations. So any disappointment that I had is my own doing. And I totally acknowledge that. Because I didn't have to go if I wanted to be disappointed. And I kind of knew I was, and I was. So there's the truth there. I was a little disappointed.
Wait, let
me
ask you
Tron.
A quick question. I don't know if you mentioned. Did you get to go in the evening, like when it was dark?
Oh, luckily, my time slot, yes, was like 8 o'clock.
Nice.
And
okay.
I'm so glad I did, because I think people who wrote it during the day kept saying, I wish I wrote it at night.
Yeah, it looks like the best part is like the lighting and everything.
Yeah, yeah. So that's a really good point. I wonder what it's like in the daytime. And actually, it was pouring rain. Like, it was like buckets of rain. And luckily, that ride, the outdoor portion, is covered. There's a part on the ride when you're going under that cabana-looking, that like big white roof thing, where the rain was raining so crazily that it was like going sideways, and I thought that there was like construction dust hitting my face. I don't know what I was thinking. You know, in the moment, you're like, "What is that?" Something just hit me. It was like sharp, pointy things, and I was like, "Oh shit, it's the rain!"
It's like hail.
It was the rain. Yeah, it was hard rain. And later on, actually added to the coolness. I was like, "All right, we're out in that light cycle in the middle of the rain outside at night." So that was cool.
Not to interrupt again, but speaking of rain, FYI. We've had a crazy storm here today, and there is now somebody literally cutting down a tree outside of my window. So if you hear any of that in the background, I do apologize.
And here in New York, we have a nor'easter here, so it's snowing at the end of March, middle of March.
Yeah, like what's happening?
But yeah, so it was raining, which added to just like all of the whole night felt just a little bit not Disney. And I think that's where I'm going with my review, is I felt like at best the theming of this ride, which is saying a good thing quality wise, is Universal Parks quality. and like
the
more
lockers,
so
the, made me think of Universal immediately.
The what?
The lockers. Like, yes. I don't know what about it. It's just like so even the technology of just the lockers is cool, but I'm like, ugh, Universal.
Very, very much so. And so specifically that the first time I've used this newer technology of like the both side lockers, so that when you leave, it's only, you only see your locker on the exit. It's pretty cool. It's like a magic trick. But the first time I ever saw that was at Velocicoaster at Universal. And that ride is, it's in direct competition, I think, with Tron, because it's meant to be what they're calling like story coasters now. But Velocicoaster is so good. And nice and long, whereas Tron is about a minute long. 1 minute. That's too short. Too short. And what happens is when you go into the locker room area, it's like all these like blue, you know, like the Tron kind of colors, blue laser stuff. But I think at this point, people who have been to Velocicoaster, it looks exactly the same. It's like the Jurassic World color scheme. I just think everybody like beat Tron to the punch, including Disney. So that was my other thing was, you know, we're not going to avoid the comparisons to Cosmic Rewind over at Epcot. Even though they are completely different rides, they're still both like story coasters. And if you had to choose one between the two, Cosmic Rewind is just so good. And part of that is they took time with the story. Like, you know, how one of the things you loved in Cosmic Rewind was like the Easter eggs to Epcot and stuff like that. Whereas Tron, I had no idea what the story was. You get like pushed into this dark room that feels a lot like Halloween Horror Nights. Like you're like following the black light on the floor. I'm like, where am I going? I'm so confused. And because there was no queue, not enough people in the queue, it made it worse. You know, when you can't follow anybody.
You're like, where are we supposed to be?
Yeah, there's just like
going?
Random people, and we're all spinning around, like holding our phones. We're very confused, but it looked cheap for some reason. The room looked cheap, and then we got shoved into this other room, which was a dead end, and then the door closed. This gave me escape room vibes, like the pre-show of an escape room. We were just kind of like stuck in this small room. This is not like a pre-show room, like Guardians of the Galaxy or anything. It was probably like half the size of the stretching room. It's really small. So they put us all in there, and you're supposed to face this wall. I think spoilers are okay, right? This has been out for so long, and there's videos out and everything. So
you can skip through if you don't want to hear it.
Right, exactly. So you go in this room, and then there's like more like circuitry neon colors on the wall. It's cool. It's the Tron thing, but you know, it's nothing special, I guess. And then there's a really cool effect that happens. Where I won't spoil it too much, actually, because it is a good reveal. But it's the only one of all of it. Okay. And so I was expecting like a true pre-show after this like mini prep thing.
But right.
Yeah, but there really wasn't any. And then the whole time you're going through the indoor portion of the queues, where I think you'd be standing for a longer time, of course, if there's an actual line filled up. But there were a lot of TV screens, and it was like, you know, the usual pre-recorded message of like how to put your how to enter the seat and what to watch out for, because this is a complicated seat. There were like a lot of instructions about how to sit on this light cycle. And one of the things that freaked me out, and I was reading online, it freaks other people out. So when you're boarding the coaster, you now usually, let's say there's it's a two-seater, you're both standing in the queue waiting for the gate to open, and then you board the coaster, right? One at a time.
Right.
This one, the person in the back, instead of, so let's say you're in front of me, you would go straight onto the first motorcycle and get on. I have to cross over the roller coaster track, like step on it. And then
that,
yeah, and then straddle.
It seems like something you would never allow to happen.
Absolutely, it feels weird. So wrong. I was going across. It was like Final Destination. I'm like, what is this? Why are they letting me do it? And because it was pretty themed, it actually didn't help because I couldn't tell like what was real and what wasn't. Like, am I stepping on an actual operational, functional wheelie thing, or is this just decoration? It is very weird to have to cross.
I would totally have the same reaction, by the way.
It's very odd. And I can see why they needed all these instructions. I mean, I barely watched the videos, and it was hard. So, I mean, I don't know. And then they had a lot of people helping. It probably took, I would say, almost a full minute just to get everybody loaded before they gave the all clear. There are two sides, so I guess that will help. But I am imagining they're going to have virtual queue for a while because this seems like a monster of a ride to deal with, like operations and then loading people. And then I would say the motorcycle feeling was pretty cool. So you have to lean forward much further than I had thought. The thing on your back isn't as restricting at all, like Avatar. It's just kind of there, and I realize what it is for is they don't want people sitting upright during the ride. But it's actually not holding you in.
It forces you to bend a certain way.
Yeah, right? Yeah. So it's just kind of there. I thought that was going to be weird, but I didn't really notice it. The handlebars, there's two, so you could go as far out as you want if you want to lean out further. And then weird locking mechanism where after you grab your handles, you have to pull them in and it locks it. The whole thing just feels like something we've never done before. So everyone just seems so confused, which is not a bad thing, right? If there's something new, I'm all for it, but it has to be worth it. And that's where I'm going with this is all of this stuff for this big ride. And then you get on the ride. It was like a 1, 2, 3 launch. Woo! You do the outside part right away. So the part that we've all seen, you know, from People Mover, that happens by the time it's finished. And you get some, I got rain blasted in my face. It was like, oh, that's it. That part's done. Okay. So then you're in the inside portion, which becomes pretty much test track, but with a coaster. And I mean, test track, the current version, this like Pontiac one, where it's just, which people kept saying that looked like Tron. It's very,
it reminds me of Tron.
Yeah. It feels like just a lot of like painted black walls with black light. And I'm sure it's much better than I'm remembering. But there's like maybe one part where there was a screen used where it looks like you were racing an orange bike. And but yeah, so I'm kind of all over the place here. But let's say I went through the queue, don't know what the story is, got on the light cycle. It was hard to get on. Still don't know what the story is. Now I'm on the ride. Still don't know what the story is. And then you get off and then that's it. You go to the locker and then you're just like dumped out into this area that's now connected to Storybook Circus. So you could go that way or back to Tomorrowland.
Whoa, that's a trip. It and there's so a far new away.
Tomorrowland sign at the end, at the back of Storybook Circus, so you could go into Tomorrowland that way. Right now, the corridor is not open unless you're exiting the ride, but it's supposed to be open. It's going to be a new pathway.
Okay.
And so, yeah, so there's that. But I got to say, this was a preview, so they do have opportunities to fix things. And now what I had learned was the more recent previews that have been happening, there's more opened. So I did miss some stuff. And what I mean by this is there was a post showroom that just wasn't ready for the previews.
What?
So that's why it felt like I got dumped into the... We just, it feels like you just got dumped in the back of the coaster. Like you could see the big white metal infrastructure, you know, the frame.
Okay,
of the coaster.
That's kind of weird. I don't feel like I've heard of an attraction that opened even for previews that didn't have a section of it working yet.
I was like, wait,
maybe
a
it was
minute.
Just down when you're on, or was it like not even for anybody?
Not for anybody. Yeah. They now announced weird. It. And but what I will tell you is I did look at it on YouTube. I don't think it would have made much of a difference. I think it would have made the transition out a lot nicer. But apparently it's all themed to Enterprise, which I haven't even got to. So as soon as you get to the canopy and you're about to start going into the indoor queue, everything is just Enterprise rent a car everywhere, and I'm like, this is just Enterprise the ride. Like the logo is almost as big as Tron Light Cycle, and I thought, oh, they paid a lot for this when you get the font size pretty close to the actual title. so that's annoying.
Wow.
And the post showroom, now that it's open, you're seeing this new color team called the Green Team. And they're all Enterprise employees, and they all have
different... Stop it!
Yeah, they have, like, different personas. Like, I'm Jax, and I'm all about, you know, efficiency and pricing and customer experience. What? So
I don't... literally are thrown into a room with a commercial for Enterprise Rent-A-Car.
Yeah, and then they have a light cycle that's green, which you can't ride on. It's just Enterprise-themed. That's in the showroom there. And all that brings me to... is that this would have worked if they opened it up in 2019 and replaced Test Track with it at Epcot. It feels Epcot-y, especially that post-showroom with, like, the sponsor. That feels like an Epcot.
Yeah, that room full of the cars.
Yes, exactly.
After Test Track has always bothered me, but I do like that you can take photo ops just because it's fun.
Yeah, I like that they put something.
Otherwise, like a car showroom is so bizarre. Like I can buy a car at Disney World.
So what? Weird. But yeah, so I think it's in the wrong place. I think it came too late. And it also definitely feels like a prototype because it's so short. It feels like Shanghai could have been the first one, and they should have done a more enhanced version for like the Crown Jewel Magic Kingdom. Like, come on now. I think it could have been a whole minute longer. And then there's some parts where the technology feels outdated because I'm watching the coasters go by and there's no masking the coaster train. Once you see it, you can't unsee it. So I'm sorry for pointing it out, but you see the coaster and then it's these Tron light cycles just glued on top of it. Whereas, like, the newer stuff, they hide the real mechanism, so it looks like, you know. So there's that. So I kept looking at stuff, but again, I went in there very critically, like, trying to poke holes in it. I was already had low expectations. So, I don't know. It's fun. I wouldn't go crazy over it. I wouldn't run over there to ride it. But if you have a chance to ride it, I think if you like a thrill, like, that first launch is really intense and crazy. But yeah, it's just kind of short. So it depends on what you're looking for. But I think if you want thrills, go to either Cosmic Rewind or Universal. Sorry. I mean, if you want like a coaster thrill.
Yeah. Right. Okay, let me ask a question. First of all, where is the entrance to Tron?
Okay, so the entrance to Tron is... It kind of depends because they have like temporary ones too. So you know how there's like that big ramp that goes under that giant lit canopy? That it looks like a giant walkway, very wide, and it kind of curves back around. It was really prominent like when we were looking at the Shanghai concept art back in the day. But yeah, basically there's this huge like elevated cement and metal ramp that is not yet the beginning of the queue, but it's under the attraction. So technically you could say the entrance starts there. But to get to that ramp is probably what you're asking also, which is to the left of the Tomorrowland Light and Power Company gift shop, which is also the exit to Space Mountain.
Okay. That's where I was picturing it. Okay.
Yeah. And so right
so
now,
it
if you were...
So it kind of tucks around the back of the Autopia Speedway or whatever it's called over there.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, I didn't realize that.
And then if you keep walking past the new canopy ramp Tron building, you end up right at the back of Storybook Circus where the restrooms are, like where we met Cruella and all that.
Right.
Which used to be a dead end. So I think that is a good thing because I was able to run from there to like Snow White or something right after.
I loved when they added that third entrance to Batu. Like, well, as soon as we found out about it, I was like, oh, it's now a complete circle. Yeah.
Makes it much, much better. Cool. And then also near the exit of Tron, they opened a food kiosk. I did see this and it was just closed up, and that's probably what added to the making me feel like I was backstage. I didn't realize that's a kiosk that was going to open soon. So it is open now, and it's called Bytes, like B-Y-T-E-S, like computer bytes.
Cute.
And they have some cool things. Like they have shumai, they have really interesting drinks, and everything's supposed to be like themed within the grid. So that seems cool. I would check that out. But the Tomorrowland Light and Power Company gift shop is not reopened yet. That's, I'm assuming, where they truly want to dump you when it ends, so that it's the gift shop with all the Tron merch and Space Mountain merch. Yeah. And right now, Space Mountain, like when you exit it, detours you somewhere weird also.
Oh, that would be weird if they both dump you into that one store.
I think that's how it ends up being.
Wow.
Actually, yeah.
I don't think there's anything that does that yet, right? I don't remember. So, yeah,
that's my Tron trip recap and review of Tron Light Cycle Run.
It's awesome. I have one last question for you. If you were to look at your Disney World app and you're in Magic Kingdom right now, at what point is it like, hell no, I'm not waiting that long to get in to that attraction?
The longest I would wait for Tron would be maybe 15 minutes.
Okay.
Yeah, I would say definitely like Lightning Lane it or however they're going to do it, if there's a way to get there sooner, if you really want to ride it. And I'm saying that also because there really wasn't too much indoor queue story. So it's not like there's something fun to look at.
Right. Okay. That gives me a good idea. I think that if I go after virtual queue, maybe for the first time, I'll wait a decent amount of time. But then after that, it'd be like 15 minutes. So.
Right. And they also announced a new Tron movie coming out. So there's a Tron 3. So they're
I didn't know that.
Yeah, they're like in it to win it with Tron right now. So
I missed that.
I hope that movie does good. Wait, there's one last thing I should have said. There's not enough, at least for me, there wasn't enough Daft Punk. There was definitely there. It was there. It was part of it. But I wanted it to be like loud and making my ears bleed while I was in the coaster.
Yeah. Right? That's what I was expecting. Yeah.
And it wasn't that. But, you know, again, this is my first time. Maybe I ride it again and it's completely different than I remember. But right now, it's a little underwhelmed. But it's something new, so it's great for Magic Kingdom. But yeah, Tron, they're making a new movie. And this last weekend was movie weekend in Hollywood. It was the Oscars. Did you watch?
Yes. Did I watch? Yes, I watched it. I actually, you know me, I don't like find enough time to watch just like TV and just not do anything else. This weekend, I watched entirely too much TV. I watched the entire Oscars, and then the Last of Us finale was also.
Oh, yeah.
Like we had to choose between the two. We finally decided like we can watch that one right after. But yeah, lots of
Sunday
TV
was a fun
the
day.
The Oscars this year, I had a lot of fun. Yeah, I had a lot of fun with the Oscars this year.
It was a fun, and you're right, the whole day, because we were treated with, well, I saw Scream in the morning, well, in the afternoon.
Oh, that's right. You did it that same day, too. Scream. That's a lot.
And then I kept forgetting about the Oscars, and I was like, oh, wow, it's tonight. Perfect. I don't have to wait for it. It's tonight. And then Last of Us after, yeah, what a fun day. Sunday fun day.
Yeah.
I thought they did a good job. I mean, last year was a hot mess with the whole Chris Rock, Will Smith incident. And this year just felt like, oh, this is just like high quality television.
We got classy again.
Yeah, it was classy.
Like,
and it
nice.
Wasn't snobby, right? It was just classy. Yeah, it was a good one.
And it was very like endearing. Like we'll talk about it in a little bit too. But like there was a lot of like important speeches that happened versus just like famous people thanking God and their parents or whatever.
Yeah.
You know what
it
I mean?
Was very like, meaningful. There was a lot of,
yes,
it felt so
and
personal.
Very heartwarming.
Heartwarming.
Too.
Yeah. Side note, the Will Smith thing. Did you watch Chris Rock's new stand up? show. I think it's on Netflix.
I haven't watched it yet. I heard he talks about Disney in there at some point, too. He does. I did see the Will Smith part, or like I heard it.
Oh, you did? Clip. Okay, yeah. So he finally addresses the thing, and he's so smart, he waited until he was getting paid to talk about it.
I love that. I love it. The hustle's real.
Yep. So yeah, anyways, that I thought it was a pretty good stand-up show. He's, it's when you see one of those comedians in their prime, like almost past their prime where they don't give a F anymore because they're so seasoned at being a comedian. Right. And so he's there now, which is really cool.
He's still in the tea.
Still there. But yeah, Disney took home some awards. They had Wakanda Forever, which won Best Costume Design. Very, very good. And then Avatar Way of Water won for Best Visual Effects, which is nice too.
Yeah. I was wondering how that was going to go. I know Way of Water did really well, but I didn't know how they're going to stand up to the other films because there's a lot of new types of films this year versus like, you know, Avatar just feels like we've already done it kind of deal.
Yeah.
But visual effects is a perfect category for that. So, and then as soon as I saw Wakanda Forever pop up on the screen, and I always say his name wrong. Is it Namor?
Namor.
Dang it.
Well, they changed it the movie. So it doesn't help you at all. Yeah. I think in the comics, people can pronounce it Namor. But in the movie, they gave it the Namor to make it Spanish.
I need to remember Amor.
Yeah.
And then I'll remember it. But yeah, as soon as they popped his like costume up on screen, I'm like, oh, they better win this one. Like, it's amazing. Even if I wanted Everything Everywhere All at Once to win it, it was too good.
Yeah. So. I remember when I was watching Everything Everywhere All at Once, I thought, these costumes are so insane.
And there's so many.
Yeah.
Like plethora.
So cool.
Oh my gosh. And then back into Disney, they finally gave us the full version trailer of The Little Mermaid, the first official full trailer.
Yeah. What's funny is I didn't know that until I think yesterday when you were saying what we're going to talk about today. Because I was like, wait, that felt really short. And then I forgot the Oscar spot was that usual thing, like the Super Bowl. It was the trailer saying the trailer's out now. So I forgot to take that second step. So I finally did last night and watched like the full on long. It's pretty long. Like they almost show too much now. Like that's enough. I've seen it.
Right. So I have to know what, I know before we were kind of like not super excited about it and it feels like we waited too long. It's almost like Tron. Like we're like, okay, can we just watch this movie already? How are you feeling about it now after seeing that trailer?
I'm still not super excited about it. It looks, okay, so it's directed by, I think Rob Marshall is his name. So he did Chicago and I think Dreamgirls. And so I don't know why I didn't put that together until now, but when I saw the trailer, it really looks like a staged musical brought to life, which to me, they've already done on ABC like thousands of times. Like they'll do Little Mermaid with this person or Aladdin with, you know, Queen Latifah played Ursula once. And it feels like that, which to me is like a yikes because this is supposed to be the big feature live action movie. So.
Right.
I'm not sure. And you had pointed out when we were at the expo, the underwater scenes just look like they're in a big studio room.
They look dry.
Yeah. And then again, it's hard to compete with themselves. Like Disney Company just put out probably the coolest underwater cinematography we've ever seen with Way of Water.
Right.
And then you go to this and it's kind of jarring. It's like, okay, weird.
Right.
I don't know. What did you think?
Well, something about this trailer did it for me.
It
got me really excited.
Oh, good, good.
I think it was because the teaser trailers were mostly like shoving Ariel in our face. Like, here's a new Ariel, get excited, right? And I was excited about it, but I wanted to see, like, it didn't feel like the movie yet. And then now that I've seen like the ship at the beginning, like the scene where Prince Eric's ship or whatever, and then like just seeing some more characters involved, it kind of put the whole movie back into focus for me. And I was starting to get really excited because Little Mermaid is by far my favorite of the Renaissance. Like that was like,
yeah, such a good one.
The movie that was just my jam when I was a little kid. So like it started looking more real and similar to what I want it to look like. And it got me really hyped. Like I was like, woo, after I watched it.
That's good. And I think part of the problem is I don't, I don't know what people want. And maybe the director didn't either. Like, I don't know what I want. Like, when I saw some of the scenes you're describing, like the ship and the hair flip out of the water that we all do when we get out of the pool, yeah. It looked so good. I was like, oh my God, that's like lifted from the movie. So right. I'm like, is that what I want? Or do I want them to do something different? I don't know what I want. So I'm a hot mess myself. I have a feeling I will go into it and I will like it. Probably because the music, like hearing her version of Part of Your World, it gets to me every time because she does this thing at the end that's different than the original. And it's just like,
and I just got goosebumps right now. Yeah. Just even thinking about it. I even have to hear it.
I felt that in the trailer. It was cool to see Ursula. Again, it looked a little like stage musical, which I guess is okay. I mean, if they made her look CG, we would have complained too. So I don't know.
Yeah. That's back into the, I don't know what I want. And I totally get that. Like I'm with you on that. Like, I guess like the nostalgia side of me wants it to be exactly like the cartoon, but a live version. But then the creative side of me is like, well, come on. Like, can we get something different? Like shake it up a little bit. Like, I kind of want both, and you can't have both at the same time. It makes no sense. Yeah. Like one or the other. So I'm with you on that. I don't know exactly what I want. So hopefully it'll work out. And, you know,
they have a hard job. The filmmakers trying to please everybody.
I think tackling these like big moments for people in their lives is really hard. Like I would be way more like nervous about remaking a film that's like one of those types of films.
Yeah. The Renaissance, all of it. Yeah.
Starting something brand new.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You have a fan base that you need to like get approval of or else you could get torn up. So, and the Disney community ain't no joke, right?
We have opinions and we'll make sure they are heard. Both financially,
you guys will hear from us
in theaters
right after this film comes out,
and online. What else? So the Oscars, musically, they did have one of the song nominees perform the song nomination. So that was Rihanna performing "Lift Me Up" from Wakanda Forever. It was beautiful. It was sweet. She's having her moment right now, Miss Riri. Okay. Pregnant again.
Right.
Now this baby can say they're at the Super Bowl halftime and the Oscars while they're incubating in her bellies. That's pretty cool.
Wait, didn't she have the baby?
It's her second baby. And so she announced it at the Super Bowl that she's pregnant. That's her second baby.
Wait, I thought she was pregnant at the Super Bowl.
She was. She announced it. So she's probably only like halfway through now. She's a little
For some reason, I thought she wasn't pregnant anymore. Somebody, I think it was that joke he was making about the baby in the back. Like Rihanna's with her baby in the back.
Oh, I don't know. I don't know if
I don't know.
That.
I'm tripping.
Yeah. She had a baby right before, not too soon before the Super Bowl. I think like last summer, and so it was all
a
shock.
Goodness.
And I remember on the interwebs, people were speculating, but they didn't want to be mean because it could have just been baby weight. But then she officially announced it like later that day on that Sunday.
Yeah. Right. Oh my goodness.
Funny. But funny story about the Rihanna song "Lift Me Up." It was written. By one of the writers, her name is Thames, I think I'm pronouncing it correctly. And I bet you know who she is because she's the woman that was wearing the white dress that was blocking everybody's view down in the audience. Yeah, she's the writer of that song, Lift Me Up. And oh my gosh, that sent the interwebs on fire. Like people were defending her, people were against her. And I think at the end of the day, it reminds me of when people wear Mickey ears right in front of you at a theater show at the Disney park.
And how pissed off are you every time?
Yeah, I get so mad. And I'm like, it's so inconsiderate. And it's one thing with Mickey ears because, okay, you probably forget they're on. I get it. But you have this giant
those headbands
ass.
Those are uncomfortable.
Right. But in this case, she had this giant ass, like, what, Matterhorn coming out of her back. You knew it was there and you knew it was blocking people's views. And you don't know whose view it's blocking. It could have been someone who won a seat there that they've never been and this is their first time. I don't know. I didn't think that was cool, but I don't want to get too involved in the drama. People are going crazy with it, but.
I know people I saw some drama online about it. People saying, like, why doesn't she just take it off? And I was like, well, I don't know if that's possible. And then somebody was saying the whole dynamic of that outfit was that it's built into the collar, and it's this whole thing, like, you can't just take it off.
Yeah. And like, apparently
you have to take the whole costume off, I guess.
It somehow makes, it's a statement piece as well. I don't know the details, but that's where it was starting to get a little testy online, because it's a statement piece that has to do with, like, anti-racism. Again, I don't know the full thing, but it was meaningfully designed, but wrong place. You can't do that. That's just not nice.
I mean, it would have been great if she was just in the last row of that section.
Yeah, right? Or you have your red carpet look, right? And then you kind of have your plan B for when you sit down.
Yeah, like just like a wedding, right? You have the wedding dress and your reception dress. Like, same. They should have made it so she could take that off.
But you know what? If the point was
spotlight,
we know who Thames is. We know who she is now. So maybe she's the winner.
You know what? I had no idea. Now I know. Oh my gosh. Well, so that's a whole lot of Disney at the Oscars, but can we just take a minute to talk about Everything Everywhere All at Once? I think this is the most discussed non-Disney topic we've had on this podcast. Like, this is just,
yeah,
like,
I agree.
We're both big fans of the movie, and I remember walking out of the theater the first day I saw it, and I'm like, they're going to clear out the Oscars. And it was so long ago now that I was like, there's so many other films, who knows what's going to happen. And they freaking cleared it out, baby. Yeah. They got Best Picture. They got so many things. It was so fun to watch all the awards come through. And some of those were the most heartfelt moments of the entire Oscars to me. Like, I fell in love with the directors. I had no idea who those guys were. But I got to really know them that evening. And just hearing, like, one of the directors, I can't remember where he's from, or his... I think he's second generation, right?
Oh, yeah. I think he is. He said his parent immigrated?
No, he did. I think he immigrated here. Didn't he say he lived a year in a camp or whatever?
Oh, maybe. I don't remember.
I think he said he lived 1 year, like, while the transfer was coming over. Like, he had to go through immigration camp. I think that was him. If not, it was his parents. I can't remember. I'm sorry. But very cool story to hear, like, his parents, like, risk everything for him and then give him that life of being able to, like, chase his dreams, and now he's won Best Picture at the Oscars. What? That's so
cool.
Freaking cool. Like, what a success story. And then his the other director, I'm not sure of his, like, sexual preference, but he talked about being in drag when he was younger, and I thought it was so cute because there's a lot of drama going on this is real shit.
Yeah.
Like, that's like, drama, it's like, hate. Yes, it's absolute hate going on in this country right now, directed so specifically towards drag entertainment that is just baffling. And I love that he took a moment during the Oscars to say, like, I was in drag and I wasn't threatening a soul. I'm right? Like, boom, like, oh, it's just so good.
Love
he just took that moment as a platform to really drive home that, like, it's just, these are the reasons I love the Oscars. I think the best things that come out of the Oscars is diversity and inclusion, and then also just, like, tackling some of these political issues that we're having. You wouldn't think it would be the right place for it, but it really is some of the most important things come across at moments like the Oscars, right?
Especially when we're talking about, like, trying to preserve and appreciate art, which is what cinema is, like... Artists usually are the ones that are like, hold up, no, we're not going to let this country go crazy. Like, over time, they vote, you know, the artists. I love it.
It's very cool. So, a lot of moments like that during the Oscars, and especially for Everything Everywhere at Once, and it's so happy.
Jimmy Kimmel Live. So, Jimmy Kimmel hosted it. And then, did you watch his Jimmy Kimmel Live Monday night? Do you watch that show?
I did not. I don't.
I started watching it only his monologue. I usually watch mostly every monologue because it comes on YouTube, just that part. And it's always quick and I can just quickly watch it. It's usually funny. But the one for Monday night was really funny because it was all a breakdown of what happened at the Oscars behind the scenes and all that kind of stuff. And his sidekick Guillermo, like, giving people tequila on the red carpet. but he also was talking about, you know, the whole moment of... Kiwi Kwan when he won Best Supporting Actor, and then later on in the night Harrison Ford was out there presenting an award, and then they were all up there together. And, you know, we've talked about it before, because back at the expo, they reunited. So that's Indiana Jones and Short Round.
Short Round,
yeah. And Indiana Jones. So Jimmy Kimmel was just like so excited. He was so excited for the actor. He was like, he's been a big fan. And then all of a sudden, live on Jimmy Kimmel, Key runs in, still in his tuxedo. This is a whole 24 hours after. And holding the Oscar. And he's just like screaming. And he's like, I'm so excited, Jimmy. I can't believe I'm here. Can you believe I got an Oscar? I got an Oscar. And aww, it was just so cute. Like, it was so genuine. And then they had this funny bit about like how the reason why he's still in his tux is because he's still at now after party number 4, and he doesn't want the night to end because it was his best day in the whole his whole life. Yeah, so sweet.
Aww,
yeah.
I love him so much. And you know what, speaking of, was that Jamie Lee Curtis's first Oscar?
I think so. It seems like it. And part of me thinks that's probably one factor to why she won it. I thought she deserved it. She's great. But Stephanie Hsu, the other co-star of Everything Everywhere All at Once, I mean, she was like so good. And she was in it longer, which I guess doesn't make a difference. I don't know how they do the categories, supporting versus not. But it's hard. You had two people for the same movie. Yeah, there was something. Somebody put something online, like a big Stephanie Hsu fan was like, they actually posted like the duration of time that Jamie Lee Curtis was in it. And then there's like someone was arguing about it's not about the amount of time, it's about what you bring to the performance. It's like, oh my God, you're all being nuts. Because sometimes the Oscars, they do recognize people, whether they say it or not, just like for their lifetime contributions. I remember Johnny Depp won for something weird. I want to say it was Pirates of the Caribbean, but it was more like because he's great, and that was one he was nominated for. But it could have been like any of the other ones, Edward Scissorhands, all those, Ed Wood. But yeah, I'm still glad that three of those the acting awards went to Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Well, we were talking about during it, and we were like, I mean, they kind of have to, because this specific film, they had to play like 10 different roles each.
Yeah,
like they had so different emotions, different looks, different everything. Like they're playing like different characters, multiple, like, you know, like think of like Mrs. Doubtfire or something like that, where they're like constantly hopping back and forth between roles. Like that's how Everything Everywhere All at Once was like, but on steroids. Like they were doing so many different roles and they had to make it work. So I feel like they should have won just naturally because of that. As long as he did it well, which they did.
Yeah, so well deserved.
So cool. Anyway, very good Oscars, but
there was a trailer for another movie that Michelle Yeoh is, not a movie, but a TV show on Disney Plus, and we saw a little bit about this at the expo. It's called American Born Chinese, and it stars a lot of the people we just talked about, and it's including some of the people who worked on Shang-Chi, Legend of the Ten Rings? I was going to say seven. Ten rings, five on each arm.
Ten.
Yeah, American Born Chinese, it's a live action, it's action comedy TV series on Disney Plus, and it's based on a 2006 graphic novel of the same name, American Born Chinese, by an author, Jean Luen Yang, and it has a huge fan following, and from what we saw in the trailer, looked kind of good, right? What do you think?
Oh my gosh, so I knew nothing about this when we were at the expo, right? So we went to a Disney Plus panel at the expo back in September of last year, and I had never even heard of it yet. And something about it looked really intriguing and really good, and I was already getting excited about it. And like, you know, like how do I say this? Like being a white girl, I'm like, okay, maybe this won't speak to me as much if it's directed for American-born Chinese, right? Like, kind of sounds like it's directed to a certain audience, maybe.
Yeah.
But I like watched it and I was totally like, this looks amazing. Like already it looks really cool. Yeah. But it looked like a fun, cute show, right? And then all of a sudden we got this new trailer for it at the Oscars and it looks fucking badass.
Yeah.
Like there was like a lot of action. The music was like action paced and like serious music. Like I don't know how to explain it. It was a very different vibe. And then of course like half of the staff of Everything Everywhere All at Once was up there. So I was like, okay, I obviously have to watch this show.
It's true. When we saw the preview of it last year, I wasn't paying too much attention. I thought it was going to be like Blackish or Fresh Off the Boat. I thought it was just a coming age of story, Wonder Years.
Yeah, like funny sitcom kind of show.
And then to see like this, like there's fantasy in it. There's like a little bit of what is that? Big Trouble in Little China. There's like just all kinds of weird Miss Marvel. Like these.
Oh my God, how cool is it to see that guy too at the Oscars? Sorry. From Big Trouble in China. It looks amazing. And it kind of gave me like Miss Marvel vibes.
Yes.
Did you say the same?
I think so. Like that whole level. Graphic novel look that they're trying to keep into it. Yeah. So that comes out, I think, this year on Disney Plus. So
I'm super excited for it. It looks really, really good. So Oscars, fun times. Do you have anything else from the Oscars you wanted to discuss?
No. No, it was a nice. No. It was a satisfied with the
it was nice. Outcomes, yes, it was good.
And the show. Yeah,
exactly. Same. All right. So the next thing I wanted to discuss is I don't know how to call it. Like, what's the big picture word for it? Like a festival, I guess. South by Southwest. Have you guys heard of this? I have heard of it for years, and I always thought it was literally a music festival. Like, I thought it was like one of those like rock country type music festivals that like turned into a music rave festival after so many years.
Oh, you were thinking it's like that one on The Bachelor they always talk about?
Yeah. I forget what that's called, but it's exactly what I thought it was. Totally. And then I looked into it because I saw this stuff coming out that Disney was involved with. So I was like, what is going on? What is this thing? And I found out it's a festival that includes different divisions over like weeks or whatever it is, however much time. And they have a division for film, music, and interactive, which it's like, it kind of turns some of those sections into like a, like the movie or the film section. It feels like a movie festival, like where they have a bunch of theaters involved and people watch films and there's panels about them and whatnot. And then the interactive looked more of like a more traditional trade show or like a D23 kind of deal where they have booths set up showing you new technology advancements and whatnot. Super fascinating. And I totally want to go now.
We should check it out one time. I've always heard good things. I always kind of knew tech was involved, but I didn't know to what degree. I also thought it was more about just the music. But then I remember some of the companies I worked at, like in the late 2000s, what are they called? The aughts. Usually be marketing would have some sort of activation or presence at South by Southwest. I didn't really know what for, but there usually was tech there. And I also learned that, I think it was around 2006, 2007, Twitter was invented. It didn't catch on. So they brought it to South by Southwest and it blew up. And Twitter became what it is. Yeah. And people were using it there to communicate with what was going on at the festival. And there was nothing like it at that time. It was like a giant chat room at the time. It always has a presence there. And I went even further and I thought, okay, if we're going to talk about South by Southwest, how long has Disney been involved? And it seems like it goes further back than either of us thought. I found things as far back as 2012. So in 2012, Marvel Entertainment takes Austin, Texas by storm in its inaugural appearance at the South by Southwest Interactive Festival. So they were there in the interactive section, and they were unveiling all these cool multimedia plans that they had and different ways we're going to be able to interact with comics. This was back in 2012. So Marvel was there for that. I found out in 2017, Disney went there to showcase the technology that they developed specifically for the live action Beauty and the Beast. So they used the festival to like showcase this new motion capture and all that stuff. I was reading about that particular event, and because it is an edgier crowd, it's usually younger press. It's more modern sites, you know, like Wired and all that. And one of the media people asked Disney, is there adequate eroticism within the Beast compared to the cartoon Beast who set my young heart aflutter many years ago?
Oh my God.
So I thought that was cute. That's the type of question you can ask at South by Southwest. And so it was just, they got a laugh out of it or whatever. They were showing like the Beast. It seems cool, right? Other film showcases that they have done and given previews there or technology demos was for Tomorrowland, Aladdin live action, Ralph Breaks the Internet, Frozen 2, Last Jedi, Lion King, and then believe it or not, there was another Tron sequel that got shelved that they were already promoting there. It turns out, I think the year after Legacy came out, Tron Legacy.
Oh, shoot.
They were already ready to do one. They had like the musician showing off the type of score that was going to happen, but then it didn't go anywhere. But we are getting one now, I think completely different. So yeah, Disney has been there, I guess, at South by Southwest doing things. And more recently in 2022, they had a whole Disney Plus takeover of part of the interactive area. And it was a whole tech showcase plus outdoor screenings and movie parties for Disney Plus stuff with like couches and like cute things. And they premiered that movie that we said, why isn't anybody talking about this movie? The Mickey Mouse movie. So Mickey, the Story of a Mouse, the Disney Plus documentary, premiered at South by Southwest, it turns out, last year. And then one last thing I wanted to say about Disney's tech history there is they have a company or part of their, within their parent company, it's called Steamboat Ventures. And this is what funds technology. It's like an incubator for labs. Sometimes we see them on YouTube come through as like Disney Labs, and you'll see like weird robots and stuff. But apparently that company funded GoPro, and Disney is a biggest stakeholder in GoPro. So they technically now own GoPro, and if it wasn't for their investment, we wouldn't have had it. So I found that to be very interesting.
I had no idea.
So they're probably there also like sniffing around for technology that they could snatch
up. Totally. Yeah. Absolutely. Cool. What? So I think I need to go to one of these cons where I actually just kind of live at the con for the weekend. Like I feel like D23 is amazing, but we always end up going to the park, right? Like it's kind of like both, but I would like to like embrace these extra things they do after, like how you're mentioning the like screenings and whatnot. There was stuff like that going on at D23. We didn't take advantage of any of it because we were just going to the park.
But yeah, they had like the Pinocchio outdoor screening or something too, remember?
Yep. Being somewhere else might help us to be more focused on the panels. That could be fun too. Maybe.
Yeah, it's hard when the park is just a stone's throw.
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely going to go there if it's right there, but still. So this year at South by Southwest, we saw a panel led by Josh D'Amaro, and this one was called Creating Happiness, the Art and Science of Disney Parks Storytelling. And I was like, what? That sounds amazing.
That's cool. Right?
They always have the best titles. I love it. So they debuted a few new things at this. Well, two new things that we haven't seen yet. One was a new Tinkerbell interaction, and they were very vague on it. Like, they weren't saying exactly what their plans are, but it looks like something that could be like a meet and greet of its own. It was basically Tink standing inside of a lantern, and she was basically like a hologram of a live character actor, like someone you would see playing Tink in the park, right? Like a full-size live person. It's not like a CGI or something like that. It's like a person in this lantern. And the coolest part that I thought was really neat about it is that people were like lifting the lantern and carrying it around. And she was like full on in there. It like didn't get weird when you moved it. It didn't have to be like lined up. It wasn't attached to a shelf. It was like super cool that you could just take it and you could talk to her like a live person. Like she was obviously a live person somewhere else.
Right. Like she's talk to her, right? Yeah.
Yeah, you could just talk to her like a regular conversation, just like you would have the interaction at the park with Tinkerbell. So either they could have this as an interaction of its own at the park. So you have like a, I don't know how to say it now because I already said life size for like a real human dressed as Tinkerbell. But now she's like a Tinkerbell life size.
Yeah, I think it is so freaking cool.
It
looks so cool and looks so real. And I mean, because it is real, because this hologram has a counterpart that's really, who knows where they are. In my mind, they're like behind a curtain 2 feet away, but they could
like
technically
the Great Oz.
beamed in from anywhere, right? She could be in Canada for all we know, just on a Zoom.
Yeah.
So cool. So creative. And also it made me think like that's stuff that during like COVID you could still keep because you're far away from the person.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. What if you could... Okay, that's too crazy. But anyways, very impressive nonetheless. And then they also showed a new robotic. And this was really fun because robots are crazy, right? Like, I am just never not amazed with watching a new robot come out because they're always like doing something that I did not anticipate. So
right. I remember when the Spider-Man bot.
Yeah.
Like we could just stare at it and be like, what's what?
I even remember what's his name? Osimo or whatever that was.
Oh, yeah.
Mind blowing when it first came out. He was like climbing stairs. Like, what?
Yep.
Remember Osimo that? Like, Honda. So long ago now, but that was like mind blowing when it first happened. Like, how is this happening? And they had a new one. This, like this, the way it worked out was really cute too. They had these two Imagineers come out with a giant crate, like a giant wooden crate. And they're talking to Josh tomorrow and they're facing him and the crate's kind of behind them. And all of a sudden, as they're discussing this robot, it like just kind of climbs out on its own. Nobody's even looking at it. It climbs out of this wooden crate, like crawling out of it, and then tumbles on the floor out of the wooden crate. Like it looked sloppy, but in like a real human way.
Yeah.
Like a little kid that doesn't have its standing yet, like a Bambi or something, right? And it just like tumbled out of this crate, and then they're like, oh my gosh. And this robot was designed to look like, they're saying she a lot. I don't know why they decided to pick a gender for this robot. But
read somewhere else that they did prototype it to be potentially Judy Hopps, which is why it probably looks bunny-esque.
Oh,
yeah.
Judy Hopps.
And then there's Zootopia opening in Asia somewhere, so they'll probably get some real cool robot before we do.
Okay, the roller skates are weird. I'll talk about that in a second. So she had long ears, and then they kept saying she, so I'm like, I don't know what's going on with this character. I don't understand the development of this character, but now that probably makes a lot of sense. However, she had a helmet on and rollerblades, and I was like, what? And they were talking about the moment that you connect with somebody else because of the situation they're in, and you're seeing this character who's probably on rollerblades for their first time ever, and they're kind of unstable, and like you just kind of feel for them. You like grow empathy immediately for that character, right? And I was like, that's really cool, but also are they just covering up because it's a robot that's not stable? Like, I don't know, like what's going on with these roller skates, but it's truly on rollerblades, and to see like a robot be able to do any of that in the first place, let alone while on like multiple wheels, like what?
And it was a good like it was a good twist, right? Because I was thinking the same thing too. I was like, uh-oh, it's falling, but then it like gracefully got back up as it was programmed to do. Like, what?
Right, yeah. And they do a stunt too on the stage, and they had it kind of walk or rollerblade or whatever towards the other Imagineer, and then they did a tumble, like a somersault, like a full-on somersault, and stood back up. It was crazy. And then the weirdest part for me was they started talking a little bit more about this, how this character is going to be used in the parks, or like how it's going to feel to see this character. And then one of the Imagineers picks it up by its waist and puts it over its head. Picture you're like a dad picking your little daughter up to put her on your shoulders. And when he lifted her above his head, her legs like spread and her knees bent, like it knew it was going onto someone's shoulders. It's like exactly how a little kid would maneuver their body
to
be
natural,
on someone's shoulders.
Like almost unsettling, because it also it didn't need to be part of what they were talking about. It was just casually happening,
just, like, talking
in the background. It was like Megan
and
vibes.
You could hear the whole audience react to it too. They're like, what? Like, that was to me the weirdest part. It was like too sentient for me. It was like a too sentient moment. Like, why did that thing just know he was putting it on his head? Because at first it looked like he was just lifting it off the ground, like, because the waist is like essentially just a pull, right? Yeah. It was still like pretty much exoskeleton or skeleton. Yeah. I don't know what you call that, but so like the waist is real tiny. You just kind of lifted it, and then that whole other part happened. I'm like, this is weird, but also very cool.
Yeah.
So,
and we are getting close to Terminator, the robots, because if you combine what like something like ChatGPT with that, then now you're getting something that can talk to you and ride on your back and do all the things.
It's weird. Very weird. It's a lot. Oh my goodness. But I mean, we've seen some of those little robot actor things, those like mobile robots throughout the park over the years. They're very temporary for some reason, but they're so cool.
Yeah.
So hopefully maybe they're figuring out a more long-term version of it. We'll see. I think they also had the Hulk come out, but we've already seen him. I still haven't seen him in the parks once, by the way, which is weird.
In my mind, I have, but I think it's just Instagram.
Yeah. I definitely haven't yet, but I'm usually not, A, over there very often, but B, early enough, probably.
Oh, you're right. A lot of the, yeah. By the time I usually get to Avengers Campus, there's no characters.
Yeah, it's like 7 p.m. or something.
Come on,
And then the last thing that people are talking a lot about that was shown during this panel was Josh D'Amaro came out. Again, his favorite thing to do is show off this new lightsaber, right? So there's a lightsaber they use at the Galactic Star Cruiser. he also demoed it at some other... I can't even remember what it was. Maybe that was Destination D, actually. I can't remember what it was, but it wasn't D23 Expo. But it's the self... expanding and retracting lightsaber. Like, it looks like a real lightsaber. It's right. Actually very, very cool.
I'm just like so over Josh D'Amaro holding these lightsabers.
He loves that freaking lightsaber
with his suit on. Like, it's so weird.
And he's always like I think you can't swing it around. I think it's very fragile. At least it seems. I don't know if that's how
he's real gentle about it, right?
Yeah, he's very gentle with it. And so it's funny because he's trying his face. And his stance is super like, yeah, I got this lightsaber. But then the way he moves, it's like, me.
Exactly that. I don't like it. It's so awkward. And to see him doing it again, I was like, wait, I thought we were done with this already. That place already opened.
He's like doing the same thing. And I couldn't find enough clips of it to figure out why they were talking about it. Are they just showing it off at this expo? It seems like the right place to. But I kept seeing a lot of people online saying that whatever he was discussing at this panel sounded like it's coming to the parks for us to have at some point.
Oh, that would be
but
cool.
I don't know at all if that's true. I couldn't find anything else on it besides people talking about it. You know how that goes. Wow. So don't get too excited, but
the ones that exist now are already pretty pricey. I couldn't imagine.
Oh, I know, right? Shoot, those are $200+. I wonder, it's going to be like a 500
This
mark,
is premium, probably. Yep, retractable. Yep.
At least 500. Shoot. Anyway, if you're interested in seeing this panel, once again, it's called Creating Happiness, the Art and Science of Disney Park Storytelling. You can look it up yourself on YouTube and watch the majority of the panel. They have clips. So like I said, some of it is not shared. Probably they do that a lot at these expos where they tell you you can't record this part.
Oh, that's right.
And then they walk around and they yell at everybody with cameras out. So or kick you out, which is... definitely not something you want to do.
You know what I think we should do?
Sections of it are up. What should we do?
I think we should do a Patreon takeover coming soon this year. I think it's time. It's that right time of the year. We're itching for a Patreon takeover. And we are going to officially announce that's happening. But first, we should explain what Patreon is. So Patreon is a website that content creators use, podcasters, Instagrammers, authors, animators, the whole thing. And you can support the artists that you like and the creators that you like by going on and becoming a member of their Patreon page. And we do have one for the Disneyholic show. And there's a bunch of different tiers that you can jump into and engage with us and interact. And we do different events now and then. So if you want to join the Disneyholic show Patreon, just visit patreon.com and look for the Disneyholic show and you'll find us there.
Yeah, you can even just type patreon.com/thedisneyholics. It'll go straight to us already.
Perfect.
So, yeah, join us. It's a lot of fun. And then about a little bit more about the Patreon takeover itself. We do this every so often where we open it up to our patrons to choose what they want us to talk about. So if any of you are listening now, it's the time, baby. Figure out those topics you've been wanting us to cover forever or something that you might find challenging or fun, unique, or something that you just want to hear more about and don't want to do it yourself, have us do it for you. That's what we're here for. So Patreon takeover for us is always a ton of fun because we get a whole broad spectrum of ideas from all of our patrons versus just what we want to do. So we end up finding out about...
And it usually...
I mean, I found out about stuff already that I didn't even know about.
Right. I love the learning aspect of it. We always get inspired too. Like we'll have a topic and then maybe build an episode around the topic and add some of our own things in there. So it's a lot of fun.
That is true. So we are going to start this for the month of April. So the very first Wednesday of April, it'll be our Patreon takeover kickoff. And I'm not going to put an end date on it yet. I'm going to see what comes in first, and we'll see how long it lasts. Last time, I think it went for 6 weeks, so we had a lot of topics. So if you want to join in on that, go ahead and join patreon.com/thedisneyholics. Sign up, and you can be part of telling us how to do our lives in our podcast, because that's fun. And then at the very end of the Patreon takeover, we are going to have a wrap party via Zoom. So we're going to have a virtual Zoom party where we get to hang out, and we'll probably have some games and some fun planned out for you guys. So yeah, really looking forward to it.
So with that, we have to thank our patrons that we have today. So I want to give some shout outs here. So we got Nick, Jessica, Emma,
Cherie, Lisa, Laura,
Ned, Pamela, Dawn,
Mike, Andrew, Christina,
Joy, Kylie, Scott,
Amelia, Courtney, Kayla,
and a big welcome to our newest Disneyholic, the Skywalking Through Neverland crew. Thank you.
Hey! Yes, yeah! Thank you all so much for your ongoing support. It really does lift our spirit to make us feel like we are doing a good job. So we have your support behind us and makes us keep making episodes and having a lot of fun with you guys in between. So another couple things I wanted to mention. If you are not a patron, there are other ways to support our show as well. Plenty of ways to do that. It can be like the smallest thing, like liking our posts on Instagram, sharing things that we ask to help with sharing, and or leaving us a review. I think this is probably the biggest one, and it's also the most, like, the biggest ask, right?
Right.
But if you leave us, if you have time, if you could leave us a rating and a review on Apple Podcasts, it's always super helpful for creators to get some ratings going on in those big systems, because it does bring our podcast to a lot more people the more often we get those reviews. So it is important to us. And if you guys could take a moment out to go ahead and add those reviews, we'd really, really appreciate it. But thank you all for the support so far and in the future. All right. Well, we have talked about a whole lot today. The Oscars. We talked about South by Southwest. We heard all about Mike's most recent trip to Disney World. And, of course, we remembered Disney legend Rolly Crump. But
this one's for you, Rolly. Thanks for listening. And we hope you enjoyed episode 128 of the Disneyholic Show.
Follow us on social media at the Disneyholics.
And if you want to get in touch, send us a message on Instagram or email us at fanmail@thedisneyholics.com.
Okay, bye. In memory of Rolly Crump, we're actually going to let him take us out of this episode today. So you get to hear about him talking about the Haunted Mansion a little more. And this was a video posted by Disney Parks. Enjoy.
My name is Roland Crump, and I started with the Disney organization in 1952. Well, I had a couple of assignments from Walt when I was working at WED. Well, to begin with, it was scary, you know, because I sat in meetings with Walt for 2 years before I opened my mouth, because I wanted to learn how everybody reacted to him and all the people that I worked with. So once I started interfacing with him, I found that he was just a sweetheart, a gentleman, and always a delight to work with. He treated you just like anybody else. He was just a regular guy, and he just wanted you to feel like you were a regular guy. He took Yale Gracie and I and put us in a big room on the second floor and said, I want you guys to work on the Haunted Mansion. And we looked at each other like, I mean, what are we going to talk about? A mansion is a spooky house. We said, okay, fine. So Yale and I started talking about different illusions and different things that we put in the mansion. And we would go see all the spooky movies that were coming out and everything. Walt just wanted us to absorb what it was like to do a haunted mansion and everything that might go in there. I started developing all this weird stuff. And Dick Irvine thought it was too weird. Nobody liked my weird stuff. Well, I came to work the next morning at 7 o'clock and Walt Disney sitting in my chair at my desk. And I said, good morning. And he says, good morning, Rolly. And he says, I just want to tell you, he says, I didn't get an ounce of sleep last night. because of all that weird stuff you showed me. He says, I know what we're going to do. And I said, you do? And he says, yeah, we're going to do a Museum of the Weird. And I said, oh, that's a great idea. Let's go with that. Well, I think the most important thing is the illusions. Yale Gracie was a crazy guy with crazy ideas with illusions. His illusions is what makes the Haunted Mansion the Haunted Mansion. So if you stop and think about taking everything out of there that he did, you'd realize that he really was the hero of the Haunted Mansion. Because, you know, he did all the ghosts in the ballroom. He did the Leota in the ball. He did the guy playing the organ. So Harry Yale was able to take something that was a great idea and make it 10 times better. Years later, after the mansion was going, somebody said, you know, that wallpaper in the hallway looks like you designed it, Rowling. And I said, I haven't been designing wallpaper. I did a lot of weird chandeliers in some of my sketches. But they took those sketches as weird chandeliers and turned them into wallpaper.
Man, I really want to go to Disneyland.